What do German neo-Nazis have in common with the Palestinian attack against Israel's Olympic team? This question may sound weird at first sight, but this is what we are discussing in this episode. And the answer is to be found when looking to highest political circles. And we follow the trails of Abu Daoud. This Abu Daoud is traveling to Germany 3 months before the attack. He's coming as a lawyer officially, but his real mission is very different from that. He's planning the terror attack.
Geheimakte 1972. Das Olympia-Attentat in München.
Hallo Tunis, wir haben die israelische Mannschaft in unserer Gewalt.
My brother came to do sport in the Olympics and they were murdered there.
Die ganze Geschichte investigativ recherchiert. Bisher unveröffentlichtes Material.
I was contacted by a German journalist, Christoph Lemmer.
Geheimakte 1972. Die ganze Geschichte.
Hochwey September mehr allein. Achadasa. Kulam Zahar.
Episode 3. Abu Daoud.
Abu Daoud was born August 16, 1937 in Jerusalem. He died in July of 2010 in Damascus, Syria. His real name was Mohammed Daoud Audi. He was the chief planner and mastermind of the murderous attack against the Israelian Olympic team 1972 in Munich. And in this episode, we uncover what mastermind literally means. However, also at the beginning of this episode, I just want to notify that we at Antenne Bayern produce this English version of our podcast series 1972 with our German personnel only. Since we do not have English native speakers in our Munich team, it may sound a bit like very German English here or there. Please just take that with a smile. Our priority was to open our podcast series to the international audience, in particular in Israel and for the families of the killed athletes. I assume that amongst you there will be some interest of listening into how a German and Bavarian media outlet handles this historical important crime with its enormous consequences for the present. So, in this episode, what Abu Daoud did and how he did, and how he tried to justify his murderous work later in life. Anki Spitzer, the wife of one of these murdered athletes, fencer André Spitzer, got in touch with him. It was him to approach her. I asked her about how this came and how it went.
Have you ever had a contact, a personal contact, meeting, writing, phoning, whatever, with Abu Daoud?
Abu Daoud, He lived in Tunis, then he went to Tripoli, then he went to Damascus, and then he went to Amman. I followed him where he was located. And then one day, he decided to write an autobiography together with a French ghostwriter, the name of Gilles Jonquet. And with his writer, his ghostwriter, they invited me to come to Damascus. And I could go to Damascus because I'm not an Israeli citizen. I have a Dutch passport and I'm a journalist, so I could go to Damascus. And I said, what should I come to Damascus for? And then they said, well, Abu Daoud wants to explain to you that they were not responsible for the death of your husband and the other guys. I said, does he say so? And he said, well, they only came for one reason. They wanted to get the prisoners, the Palestinian prisoners, out of prison in Israel. They wanted to negotiate. They did not come to kill them. I said, if you don't come to kill, why do you come with Kalashnikov, automatic weapons, with all kinds of hand grenades and all kinds of weapons and revolvers and so on, you know? And if you didn't come to kill them, why did you kill already in the morning after you at 4:30 in the morning came in? At 5:30, the first dead Israeli was already put in front of the building. Why did you, in the room where they were kept hostage, why did you kill and castrate Yosef Romano? Why did you torture the other hostages and broke their bones and everything. So what are you talking to me? He said, no. That was not our plan. And we would not have killed the other nine after the first two were killed. We wouldn't have killed them, but the Germans, they fooled us. They told us that we can fly out of Germany with the hostages, and in the end it came out that they didn't. So Germany, they are responsible, not us. And I said, and for this I have to go to Damascus. And he said, yes, I would very much like to tell you this in person, so that you know that that was not our plan. I said, you know what? I can imagine myself coming to Damascus, and you probably invite a photographer, and you have coffee waiting for me, and I'm coming into your room, and the photographer is going click, 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 and you will give me a kiss, and are you out of your mind? You think that I'm going to do this? I said, Mr. Abu Daoud, I do want to meet you. You know where? In the court in Israel. There I will meet you. Not in Damascus, thank you.
Plain text, Abu Daoud and his French ghostwriter just wanted to use Anki as a mascot. Lure her to Damascus to shoot some nice pictures for the media, hoping they would report about the staged meeting and feature his book.
File notice. Detective Department Munich Police Investigative Report. Investigation against Wali Saad alias Abu Daoud for aid in murder and other crimes.
Short explanation here. In this file, Abu Daoud is named with another alias name, which is Wali Saad. In some files, the officers wrote the alias as Wali Said. So you get three different names minimum for this one person. Sometimes detectives use their own transcription of writing the Arabic name into their German language documents. Whenever possible, we use Abu Daoud because this is his most common alias. However, in this document, the officer used Wali Saad, which we just keep as it is.
At the end of June, Wali Saad traveled into Germany in charge of representing Udo Albrecht as a lawyer, who was imprisoned in Austria and facing prosecution for possession of explosives. Wali Saad resided in the Hotel Römischer Kaiser in Dortmund from June 29th until July 1st and from July 7th until July 10th, 1972. The hotel registration is available.
In fact, being an attorney was Abu Daoud's real profession. This was testified by a former neighbor of him from Baghdad who had moved to Germany and lived here in 1972. Abu Daoud visited her as well during his stay in Germany, allegedly as part of his legend and not to catch attention. Back to the file notice.
In the Munich Hotel Senefelder, located Munich 15, Senefelder Street number 4, an Iraqi citizen named Wali Saad Edin had been registered as a guest two times. First from August 8th until August 15th, and then from August 23rd until August 25th. On August 25th, this Wali Saad moved into another Munich hotel, which was the Eden Hotel Wolf, located Munich 2, Arnulf Street number 428. He received room number 130 during the afternoon after 2 p.m. He left this hotel September 5th, before noon, and allegedly left the country as well.
Okay, Abu Daoud's travel schedule through Germany as far as it can be reconstructed from the files. During July, he traveled through the German state of North Rhine-Westphalia. Two times he spent a couple of days in a hotel in Dortmund, the city where Udo Albrecht lived. Then he traveled to Munich. During August, stayed two times in a room in the Hotel Senefelder and afterwards for 10 days in the Eden Hotel Wolf. There he left exactly the day when the terrorists had invaded the Olympic Village and held the Israeli athletes as their hostages. He left inconspicuous when all eyes and TV cameras focused to what happened in the Olympic Village, which all was planned by him, Dortmund and Munich. Police investigators knew about his stage shortly after he left. Sources, hotel registration papers, and testimonies of hotel personnel. What did he do? Whom did he meet?
File notice. Phone calls. August 27th at 8:21 p.m. and September the 2nd at 4:06 p.m., 6:49 p.m. and September 4th at 3:05 p.m. Phone number 55562. This connection belongs to the Hotel Salzburg, Munich, Senefelder Street number 1. In this hotel, two of the terrorists had been renting rooms at this time. Kartu Hamid, called Tony, between August 8th and August 25th. Alkuri Yessa, called Issa, between August 28th and September 4th.
Got it? This notice says that Abu Daoud stayed in a Munich hotel in the same street than the two operational leaders of the terrorist attack, Issa and Tony, whom we met in the previous episode. The police investigation found lists of phone calls, so they were able to reconstruct 5 calls originated by Abu Daoud to the hotel where Issa and Tony resided. Then Tony relocated into a private accommodation. His landlord reminded herself that there were 2 phone calls for him. She said they came from the Eden Hotel Wolf, the place where Abu Daoud stayed at this time. However, it was never laid open what in particular these men were talking about. But they did talk at all, that much is clear. But that's not all, of course. There's more about what Abu Daoud has done. There's particularly one detail which is really thrilling. It's about spying out the Olympic Village. It's very detailed. It highlights the power of the Palestinian Terror Organization force. It's surprising. And it's more than just allegation, because the one who talked about is the mastermind himself, Abu Daoud. It was 1 year after the Munich attack. Abu Daoud got caught in Jordan by Jordanian police. They interrogated him. Amongst other things, they asked him what he knew about the Palestinian murder attack against the Israelian Olympic team in Munich the year before, 1972. Abu Daoud answered he knew quite a bit, but not from personal first-hand experience. He said it was one of his comrades who told him lots of insights. He claimed that there were 2 other PLO leaders who had come to Germany to prepare everything. But no one amongst the investigators, not in Jordan, not in Germany, just nowhere, believed this, for several reasons. Firstly, Abu Daoud was recognized by lots of people during his travels in Germany without any doubt. Secondly, his statement was so detailed that all investigators concluded that he must have experienced all this in person. I found this testimony within classified files. The interrogation was in Arabic, then translated in English, and then in German. The quality of the English translation stored in the Munich State Archive is so poor that it's virtually not usable. There are pages where you cannot recognize a single word. So I referred to the German translation, which was typed. The archived copy is much better readable. What now follows is my translation back to English. And I promise, there is suspense in what Abu Daoud told the Jordan interrogators.
To finalize the operation, Abu Ayad asked me for my Iraqi passport, issued to the name of Sa'ad El Bin Wali, because there was a German entry visa in this passport.
The lie here is that Abu Daoud gave away his passport to a comrade. Truth is that this passport has been used to travel to Germany and as well to register in various hotels in Germany. This is how the alias name Wali Sa'ad landed into German files. Back to Abu Daoud's testimony.
In fact, Fakhri El Amari flew to Munich.
Which is a lie again. In reality, it was Abu Daoud himself who flew to Munich. Abu Dawood just pretends that Fakhri El Amari did the trip instead of him.
In Munich, Fakhri El Amari tried to get into the Olympic Village and look around, but failed. He was forced to acquire another person for aid. He called Mohamed Musalla in Libya to come to join him because he knew several languages as German and as well because he served as an architect for construction of the Olympic Village.
Got the point? Abu Dawood fails to spy out the Olympic Village in person. But hey, he had a comrade now living in Libya who was an architect and, unbelievable but true, was part of the team that constructed the Olympic Village. What a coincidence. This Mohamed Musalla knew the construction drawings. He spoke German and he knew some of his Munich colleagues who would let him on the premises.
I got notice that Mohamed Musalla came from Libya to Munich and that he investigated the Olympic Village. It was helpful that he spoke German and that he knew where to find the entrances. So he learned that the Israeli delegation was billeted in block number 36. He also asked for the security measurements, especially for the block 36 that were located on the opposite side to the quarter of the Saudi Arabian delegation that Mohamed Musalla was allowed to enter under the pretext to meet a certain person. The Saudi Arabians did not know about our operation. They had nothing to do with it. He had access in his role as an architect. He ensured himself that the construction of the Saudi Arabian quarter was identical to the construction of the Israelian.
This is what Abu Dawood testified as he was interrogated by Jordanian investigators in 1973. So what he said is that he flew in his architect from Libya to Munich to support him planning the murderous terror attack against the Israeli team. What huge luck for the terrorists. So they gathered insights they otherwise never were able to get. They learned that the Saudi quarters rooms were of the same cut than those of the Israelis. That was high-level spying out a crime spot.
Fakhri El Amari,
in real Abu Dawood,
acquired the arms with Abu Gabun in two steps. The first shipment arrived September the 1st, 1972, and the second on September the 4th, 1972. The arms shipment consisted of quick fire guns and 10 American grenades.
So the weapons arrived very shortly before the attack in Munich. They had been deposited in a locker in the Munich Central Railway Station. Abu Dawood's testimony about the quick firearms turned out being correct. More precisely had been if he said that it were Kalashnikovs. The quantity of grenades should be correct as well, but it were Belgian, not American. Now the question is, how did the arms get into Germany? The answer gives a German ally of Abu Dawood and the Palestinian terrorists, a German neo-Nazi. It is the man who drove Abu Dawood all through Germany from Dortmund to Munich and to other places. The man who filled in all hotel registration forms. His name, Willy Pohl.
File notice. Munich Police Department. Final report. Investigation on behalf of the Munich State Attorney at the Munich Country Court No. 1.
Just a couple of days after the terror attack against the Israeli team, police forces arrested three men in a Munich apartment. All three were professional criminals and neo-Nazis. One of them, Willy Pohl.
Pohl and a certain Walisat are suspected to be members of the Palestinian underground organization. They allegedly planned to free Mr. Udo Albrecht, at this time imprisoned in Austria for theft and forgery.
In fact, being an attorney was Abu Dawood's real profession. And Udo Albrecht was his client, one of the most enigmatic figures within the German neo-Nazi scene. Escaped from communist East Germany to the West. Tried to form a neo-Nazi guerrilla group following Palestinian example. Traveled to the Middle East, came in touch with Palestinian leaders. Trafficked military vehicles from Germany to Palestinians. Back to file notice.
Investigation of the kidnapping in the Olympic Village brings up the name of a certain Walisat, also known under the name Daud Audé Mohamed alias Abu Daud, as being the mastermind behind this attack against the Israeli Olympic team. This Walisat is the same person who met Willy Pohl in the beginning of July 1972 in Dortmund. Walisat resided in various hotels in Dortmund and Munich from end of July until early September. Evidence was brought up that it was always the same person Walisat through passport photographs presented to the staffers of the hotels and a graphological expertise of the hotel registration forms.
This is how the graphological expertise was conducted. Police confiscated handwriting samples from Willy Pohl and also all registration forms on behalf of Abu Daud from all hotels known. All these writings have been reviewed by a graphological expert within the Central Bureau of Investigation of Bavaria. The result? The handwriting was all the same hand, and that was Willy Pohl's hand. So Abu Daud was not alone when he checked in into the hotels in Dortmund and Munich. Willy Pohl was always with him. And it was then this Willy Pohl who uncovered how the weapons used for the terror attack against the Olympic team Israel came to Germany. He said that 10 years ago in public. The weapons had been brought from Libya to Palma de Mallorca. There, so said Pohl, had been a so-called people's office of Muammar al-Gaddafi's state. The Palestinians have had access to this depot. Pohl obviously knew what he was talking about. When the police raided his apartment, they found Kalashnikovs and hand grenades, both of the same make than the weapons used by the Palestine terrorists when they assaulted the Israeli team. Did you notice it as well as I did? Lots of mentions of Libya in this episode. Abu Daud phoning to a Libyan phone number. A number which had been found in the notebook of Willy Pohl as well. Abu Daud living in Libya's capital Tripolis for a while. Arms coming from Libya. The architect Mohamed Musalla traveling from Libya to Munich to spy out the Olympic Village. Lots of Libya. Lots of Tripolis. So what is this? Just coincidence? Or does Libya play a special role into this crime? There's one other thing to be mentioned. The terrorists had lots of money. Abu Daud traveling around for at least 2 months. Tickets for ship passages, train rides and flights for the operational soldiers. The trips Issa and Tony undertook between Beirut, Amman, Damascus and Munich. Hotel accommodation, cost for communication and phoning. The pretentious Tony showing off he inherited a fortune. Where came all that from? Maybe Anki Spitzer knows the answer, the widow of fencer André Spitzer. Anki works as a journalist for the Dutch and Belgian television. As a journalist, she was able to interview prominent Palestinian leaders, amongst them Yasser Arafat and his present successor Mahmoud Abbas, alias Abu Mazen. Abbas, and this now gets important, used to be Arafat's finance minister. He knew where the money came from and to where it went. Anki Spitzer, when working as a journalist, uses another name to not mix up her roles as the wife of one of the killed athletes and her journalistic duties. The Palestinians didn't know about her full identity and maybe still don't know still today, although she isn't separating her roles as consequently as she did over previous years. In the following, she uncovers how she spoke with Mahmoud Abbas about the financing of the Munich attack in 1972. She gave him permission to disclose this never-before-published information.
Had you ever the impression of this or that guy, maybe Arafat, could have to do something with the death of your husband?
Sure. Arafat was totally aware of the action of this Black September. He was not fighting himself or killing himself people, but he knew they would have never been able to do this action without him knowing. And Mahmoud Abbas, the present president, he was the finance minister of the whole action. You know, he was very much involved. He provided the money. So I did one time a thing which is not ethical as a journalist. I interviewed him. He was old, I was old, and we were sitting on the sofa and we were interviewing about other things. And I said, tell me, is it true that you financed, there was this attack? Where was it? Somewhere in Germany, you know? I played it as if I had no idea. I was thinking, did you finance that? And he said, turn off the camera. So I said to my cameraman, I gave him a sign that as if he is going to turn off the camera. And he said, yes, because, you know, we were getting money for our fight, our struggle for independence and whatever and so on. So, and I wanted to know where he got the money from. Who were the people that provided the money? So I said to him, look, where did you get the money? He said, you can try three times. You can try to guess. And I said, and are you going to answer, you know, really? He said, yes. So I said, you got the money from Saudi Arabia. And he goes with his head, no. I said, that was crazy, like a guessing game in the office of the Palestinian president. So I said, you got the money from Egypt. He said, no. And then I said, you got the money from Libya. And then he nodded with his head, yes.
I tried to confront Abbas about this through the Palestine office in Berlin to ask if this really happened, but my question remained unanswered. What remains is the statement of Anki Spitzer. It is the first time that she tells this incident. It is no proof, but it fits just perfectly. The Libya of Muammar al-Gaddafi as potent financier for terror against Israel. This fits just perfectly and even more and better when it comes to the very end of this. 54 days after the killing of the Israeli athletes in Munich and Fürstenfeldbruck, this is what I will report about in a later episode. Willy Pohl and two of his companions were in court due to their supporting Abu Daoud and the terrorists who assaulted the Israeli team. 1.5 years after, he was sentenced to 2 years and 4 months prison for illegal arms possession. A gentle verdict. And it was never executed. Pohl was released after a couple of days behind bars. And strangely, the verdict was erased from the Central Federal Register of Germany. As if Germany had no interest in talking about this massacre against the Israeli athletes in Munich anymore. The youngest victim of the murderous attack against the Israeli team was only 18 years old. A wrestler who had been nominated for the Olympics just last minute. Who had been migrating from communist Soviet Union to Israel shortly before. Who came from Minsk, today the capital of Belarus. His name, Max Lavin. When I was in Israel, I met his sister due to a fantastic coincidence. This is what I will tell within the next episode. This and the story of the life of Max Lavin. You like this podcast? Consider writing a review, sharing it with your friends, or clicking like or full 5 stars. You feel you have something to contribute? Contact me via email to geheimakte@antenne.de.
Geheimakte 1972. 50 Jahre nach dem Olympia-Attentat in München. Ein Podcast der Antenne Bayern Group.